That is the Young Dubliners with their version of Fisherman's Blues.
I loved it.
Yeah, love that song.
And it made me think of, you know, a new, well, at maybe some point down the road, you know, years down the road, because DJ Ding is looking for your favorite things about Ireland, which he'll be helping craft his request line playlist today. So if you do have your favorite thing about Ireland, please text 218-326-1234. But it also made me think of another theme, Irish covers of other songs, since you had mentioned that one was a cover. And then, of course, the first one that comes to mind is Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor, but I know there's a plenty out there.
Yeah. Oh, plenty.
There's a plenty. That was totally...
or plenty of covers.
There's a plenty of covers out there. There you go.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. We're operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. You may find us at KAXE.org or ask your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you so much. Coming up in just a moment, we'll have headlines from National Public Radio, but first a look at today's weather. There's a slight chance for some snow, mostly cloudy, highs in the 40s, east winds 5 to 10, and tonight mostly cloudy, lows 20 to 25. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with highs near 40.
And don't forget, our question of the week is, tell us about a time that luck was on your side. Of course, today is St. Patrick's Day. We want to know a time when... yeah, you felt lucky, or like we said, luck was on your side. So text us 218-326-1234.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. A weekend of strong storms in the U.S., largely in the South and Midwest, are blamed for at least 39 deaths and widespread power outages. Fatalities are reported in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Alabama. Emily Mosier with Troy Public Radio has more from Troy, Alabama, southeast of Montgomery.
People in Troy, Alabama, who once considered themselves living in the woods, say that has changed after a tornado toppled hundreds of trees around their homes. Don Wambles with the Alabama Disaster Relief Association has rushed to many scenes of destruction to provide aid. But he breaks down when talking about the tornado in his own neighborhood.
You see the damage, the destruction to people's lives, and the fact that they're just absolutely overwhelmed by the damage.
Alabama Governor Kay Ivey has expressed condolences to those across the state who have experienced property damage and loss of life. For NPR News, I'm Emily Mosier in Troy, Alabama.
President Trump says he plans to speak with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow about the U.S. proposal for a 30-day ceasefire between Moscow and Ukraine. Speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One last night, Trump expressed optimism about efforts to halt the fighting for at least a month, saying in his words, "I think we have a very good chance." Ukraine accepted the ceasefire proposal at talks in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, with a U.S. delegation. That was followed by Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, traveling to Moscow, where he met with Putin and other Kremlin officials. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says U.S. airstrikes targeting Iranian-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen will continue until the rebels can no longer control which ships pass through the Red Sea. The U.S. has carried out dozens of strikes against the Houthis of late, involving ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as drones. President Trump's threat to place a 200% tariff on imports of alcohol from the European Union continues to hang over the bloc. Terry Schultz has more.
French Prime Minister François Bayrou is suggesting it was a mistake for the EU to include Kentucky bourbon on its list of U.S. goods that will be hit by tariffs next month in response to Trump's imposition of a 25% tax on imports of steel and aluminum last week. Bayrou told French radio it was probably a misstep to treat Kentucky bourbon like a trade threat. France will suffer heavy losses as a major producer of wines and cognac if the U.S. goes ahead with further import duties, which Bayrou says he hopes can be headed off. Trump insists the EU drop its intention to tax bourbon. EU tariffs on a wide range of U.S. goods are due to take effect in phases April 1st and April 13th. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
This is NPR News from Washington. Federal authorities, including the FBI, are warning people about a ransomware scheme being carried out by hackers targeting email. It involves what's known as ransomware as a service software called Medusa. Officials say Medusa has been used to carry out ransomware attacks for several years. The hackers use phishing campaigns to try to steal victims' credentials. Users are being advised to patch operating systems, software, and firmware. The Vatican has released a photo of Pope Francis praying in a hospital chapel as he continues to be treated for double pneumonia. As NPR's Joe Hernandez reports, the pontiff has been hospitalized in Rome for more than a month.
The image published online by the Holy See press office shows Francis sitting in a wheelchair inside the hospital's private chapel. The Vatican says Francis, who was wearing a white robe and purple vestment, was praying after having just finished concelebrating Mass Sunday morning. The 88-year-old Pope entered the hospital on February 14th for a case of bronchitis. While there, he developed several other medical issues, including a polymicrobial infection and pneumonia in both lungs. But doctors now say Francis is stable and responding well to his ongoing treatments. Joe Hernandez, NPR News.
College basketball's March Madness tips off this week. In the men's bracket, Auburn, Duke, Houston, and Florida are the top seeds in the 68-team tournament. In the women's bracket, UCLA, South Carolina, Texas, and USC are the top seeds. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org.
It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Good morning. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Chris Walker.
Good morning, everyone. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Still some green out there after the snow this past weekend, so not too much covered, but it looks like it should melt this week, so.
Yeah. In fact, if you are a maple syruper, I believe this week is going to be exactly what you need, I think, with the temperatures below freezing at night and then up into the, 40s, I think, is what you need for maple syruping.
You're looking at me like I would know the answers to these questions.
You're an expert maple syruper. Right?
We should. We talked about it this year because we do have a good number of maples in our yard, and it's one of those things where we talked about it all winter long, and then, the first 40, 50 degree day hits and you see the neighbors already have theirs up and we're like, oh yeah, we were going to do that. From what I've heard, it's already almost about too late, but
Well,
I shouldn't say that. I'm sure some people can still gather some, but
yeah. And I always wonder what happens when, cause if it gets really warm, like it was on Friday, and then it gets really cold again, like that much swing in temperature. I don't know if that's good.
No, I can't imagine it's ideal, but if you have any
tell us all
tidbits,
about
we would love to know.
Text in 218-326-1234. Am I right? Am I wrong? Is this week going to be a good maple syruping week?
There's a whole lot of things we want to know from you. We want to know what your favorite things about Ireland are. So DJ Dane can put together his playlist this morning for Headwaters. And we also want to know about a time when luck was on your side. That is our question of the week. So you can please text us to 218-326-1234, and we would love to share your story on air. Jennifer, is there a time when luck was on your side you can recall, or a couple times maybe?
One time I lost something and I went back to find it and it was still there. But that sounds dumb. But it was like, I lost something in a parking lot and I didn't know where I lost it. And I started retracing my steps and it was like an hour later and it was still there. I didn't know where I lost it, but it ended up it being in a parking lot that I had been at, and it was something kind of valuable, and it was just sitting there right where it fell out of my car.
Well, I can relate to that because I lost my car keys coming into the morning show this past winter. And who happened to find them? Jennifer Barr.
Yes. It wasn't hard. I wasn't out looking for them.
Right.
There's Chris's keys.
Well, I think I dropped them in the snow and then the snow melted.
Yep.
And
it was, You lost them before Thanksgiving, and then it when it was, I think it was snowing the day you lost him.
That was like one of the first days snows. We had a good snow yeah. cover, of
and
course.
Then it got warm after Christmas.
Yes.
And then, yes.
I Luck was on my side because you happened to see them and yeah. find them. Thank yeah. you again for that.
We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids, offering both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service on Apple products and computer repair. More at paulbunyan.net.
We also receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, the headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
Slight chance for a little bit of snow today. Mostly cloudy, highs in the 40s, up to 49 in Brainerd, a bit cooler in northwestern Minnesota. East winds 5 to 10. Mostly cloudy overnight, lows in the low 20s. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs near 40. And looking ahead to Wednesday, partly sunny with highs in the upper 30s and breezy north winds. We're going to continue now with a story from National Public Radio. They've been looking back at the first quarter of this century. Can you believe we're already a quarter of the way through the 21st century?
Wow, that I haven't heard anyone put it that way.
Yeah.
And now that you do, that's pretty crazy.
So in this the story, they're going to be looking at how the music industry has changed in the last 25 years.
Oh, fantastic.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We are reporting on the first quarter of our century. Those 25 years show how our world has changed and give us clues to where we're going. In today's installment, we consider a quarter century of music. The world has changed even more than it did in the first quarter of the 20th century.
I mean, when you're down in the...
When music like this was popular, jazz and blues spread through technology, flat disc records. Technology from the early 1900s eventually changed the music itself. New, more sensitive microphones made it possible for musicians to sing to their audiences in a more intimate way.
You came to me from out of nowhere.
Bing Crosby rode those innovations far into the century, while jazz and blues inspired music that lasted even longer.
Say my name, no one is around you.
In our quarter century, technology again is changing music. In the year 2000, CDs ruled the earth. NSYNC sold 2.4 million copies of No Strings Attached during its first week, and that was a record.
But then piracy happened.
NPR Music's Ann Powers is our guide to this quarter century.
I mean, this was young tech masters figuring out how to share music across the new expanse of cyberspace.
In 2000, internet file sharing was already causing CDs to go... Napster launched about 9 months before that NSYNC album, and others followed. NPR talked with two University of Virginia students back in 2000.
I used to spend a lot of money on CDs and stuff, and now it's just so much easier just going like these Napster things. It takes like 10 seconds per song.
I'm online right now, and there are 259,025 separate songs, all of which are online and accessible by me.
Which meant 259,025 separate songs for which artists and record companies were not being paid.
It was a real shock. I mean, the gates were falling everywhere, and fans were taking control.
Labels were freaking out. Entire record store chains went out of business.
This was as big a change as when the recorded music era began 100 years before. What most of us fans didn't know was what the labels were already planning, right? Which was to figure out a way to monetize and, frankly, corporatize this new Wild West.
First by suing Napster out of existence, and then by supporting music streaming. Spotify came out of Europe in 2006, reaching the U.S. in 2011.
Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify, he's Swedish. Sweden was like the wildest Wild West for piracy.
Who knew?
Absolutely. And this was supposed to be like, hey, let's all put our stuff on the same platform, make it easy for fans. And as they were able to make these deals with the labels, they had the music everyone wanted.
For those who don't use it, Spotify is like a personalized radio. The record labels get paid, and you pick the music. Eventually, you pick different music because the tech makes it possible. I'm thinking about the way that I use my phone for music. I'll get a song in my head and I'll listen to it 50 times.
Right.
No problem. I may also go, an old song comes into my head, Snowbird.
Yes.
Spread your tiny wings and fly away.
And take the snow back with you where it came from on that day.
Anne Murray, right?
Yeah, well, at first I didn't know the name, but I found the song. I found that was the artist that had the hit. And then I start finding all the other versions of this song.
Right.
Elvis Presley sang that song.
The breeze along the river seems to say.
Loretta Lynn.
That he'll only break my heart again should I decide to stay.
I'll end up having this experience of music that I had no idea I was looking for until I started looking for it.
Well, this is why we love streaming, frankly. It feels so natural. It feels organic. It moves at the speed of thought. But there are consequences. There's been very major consequences for artists. The rise of streaming has really changed the economics of the music industry in ways that have not benefited most artists.
Well, let me understand that, because I would think that the person who's not super famous would benefit from streaming, because whatever their audience is, they can maximize it through streaming. If there's only 10,000 people in the world who might like their music, they can find it on streaming. Why isn't that not good for them?
Well, this is the paradox, right? We live in a time when it is far easier to become a, I guess, quote unquote, professional musician, or become a musician with the public, let's say, than ever before. But fewer and fewer people can sustain themselves.
Wow.
Because music has been devalued, frankly. If everything feels free, we expect things to be free. When the major labels negotiated deals with the platforms, the artist was left out in the cold.
And if technology made it hard to succeed, it also determined who did succeed. Algorithms and playlists increasingly choose music for people who stream it, and they often create hits.
So a song like Despacito or Old Town Road by Lil Nas X, which is a total streaming phenomenon, you know, it was on so many playlists that it just never went away.
Is it possible we're heading to that moment when people turn on a particular stream that's delivered to them by algorithm, and the algorithm begins sending them reasonably serviceable, good enough music that's produced by AI?
Yes.
And no human beings have been involved in it at all.
It's already happening.
This is a Vocaloid, a voice entirely AI generated. She's got a name, Hatsune Miku. You can see a picture of her rendered as an anime character, but she doesn't exist, singing without the singer. One of my kids listens.
People are so adaptable. Just as no one thought at the dawn of the recording industry that, you know, listening to a voice that was pressed onto a slab of wax could be as good as hearing someone sing in person or play the piano in person. Look how we adapted to that. Bing Crosby got his mouth near a microphone and the world swooned. So this is what we do. We adapt to technology.
Ann Powers has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve.
We're telling the history of the first quarter of our century. We've so far heard of space travel and music, and we have more to come. This is NPR News.
It's 8:19. You're listening to the Monday Morning Show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Chris Walker.
Yeah, when you hear the first quarter of the century, it's always one of those things where you look back at history and you read about, you know, 1900 to 1925, and it sounds like such a long period of time.
Yeah, and think of all that happened in that period. And now, the last 25 years.
Yeah, and you don't think about it as being that long of a period when, you know, you were alive during it, but holy cow, we've hit a quarter century already. Mm-hmm. Well, good morning, everyone. Hope you're having a great start to your morning. We're talking a lot of things today, Jennifer.
Right.
With it being St. Patrick's Day, we want to hear some of your favorite things about Ireland, a time when luck was on your side. We're still looking for some texts at 218-326-1234.
That's right. Irish food is a big part of the holiday. You were telling me that your family made some items this weekend.
We did. We had my wife Ashley's family over yesterday, and we made a few just real easy dishes. We made a couple loaves of Irish soda bread, which is a great recipe for anyone who wants to try to make bread without yeast, because it's mainly with baking soda, and it only took like an hour, and it's delicious. It is really, really good. And we made Reuben wraps with, you know, corned beef, Swiss cheese, Thousand Island sauerkraut, and then we had these sourdough rye wraps that if anyone out there has ever had like a Crunchwrap Supreme at Taco Bell, that's exactly what we did. We folded them that way instead of rolled them up. Okay. And then you put them on a skillet to kind of grill them on each side. They're really good. And Ashley's family brought potatoes, beer cheese dip. So something we'd never really done before, but
yeah,
I know my favorite part of traveling is eating and just in general, trying other food from other cultures. So I think more days like this and reasons to to try other cuisine is I'm all for it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we just heard from our friend Kathleen in Brainerd. She said, so many good memories of Ireland and its people. We traveled there decades ago with our then 6-year-old, 3-year-old, and 3-month-old children. Long story shorter, we misplaced our passports, money, and airline tickets, only to have our youth hostel find them and secure them. That sounds like luck. A definite time we felt lucky. Yeah. One of our sons stepped on my husband's glasses and broke them. Ooh. Our rental car was a manual transmission. I only drive automatics. We found an optometrist shop 500 feet from our hostel. They fixed my husband's glasses good as new. After mild ribbing, they told us the repair was free. Amazing, pure luck. Pub food and Craig is the best. Our B&B host believed 100% in the fairies and trusting the Irish citizens. We're so trusting, so refreshing. There we go.
There you go. Basically, maybe that's where some of the luck comes from is what Kathleen is saying. The Irish people were just great people. And so, you know, you find some good luck there from the people you're around.
Yeah, especially in response to bad luck.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was a great story. Thanks so much for sharing, Kathleen. And if you have a story like hers, whether it's one from Ireland, that was kind of great because we were asking for your favorite parts of Ireland in a time when luck was on your side. And Kathleen happened to find one that hit both those notes. So if you have a story as well, we want to hear it. 218-326-1234 about Ireland, Irish food, maybe. Share some of your favorite Irish dishes, favorite parts of Ireland. Whether you've been there or not, maybe you've seen some pictures or videos or shows about it. And then, yeah, of course, a time when luck was on your side, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. 218-326-1234. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
Northern Community Radio's Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of every month. If you have questions or are interested in joining the board, contact us at 218-326-1234 during business hours. The board's full meeting schedule is available online at kaxe.org.
Coming up at 8:30, we'll have a special edition of the Up North Report with Chelsea Perkins. And at 8:45, we're going to meet Marina Lovell from Great River Rescue in Bemidji. They are having their Fur Bowl fundraiser this Sunday, and their pet fixer clinics are coming up once again, so we'll learn more all about that. That's coming up at 8:45. And then 9 o'clock, DJ Dang, your host for Headwaters. He'll have a great mix of music for you and wants to hear your stories about Ireland or what you love about that culture. Again, you can text us 218-326-1234.
Yeah, it's one of the more cliche things, but one of the really fun parts when we visited Dublin was St. James's Gate and the Guinness factory tour. Mm. They teach you how to pour a proper pint of Guinness because there's a lot of science behind it and a specific way to do it. And once you've done it correctly, you get a certificate that says you're an official
fancy
proper pourer of Guinness.
Yeah.
And I remember we were walking through the Temple Bar District and we tried to go to... We didn't go to the actual Temple Bar for whatever reason. I think maybe because it was overcrowded. We found this really small pub right in that main stretch because it's a whole area. We went in there and it was really small, got a pint of Guinness. It was, it really felt like you were truly in a different country because it wasn't your typical, bar, no TVs or anything like that, no music. and a lot of people just having good conversations, a lot of books on the walls, I remember. And we sat there, had a pint of Guinness, had a really cool conversation, and then later found out that it was one of like the top 10 places in Ireland. It said it was some travel writer or article. We found that it was one of the top 10 places in Ireland to get a pint of Guinness, as nice. it was a journalist pub. And so there was always directed by a lot of conversation. And I always love those stories too, when you totally stumble upon something accidentally and come to find out later that it was a pretty cool spot.
Yeah. Now I heard about a thing just recently from you and Malachi and about splitting the G in your Guinness.
I've never heard of this or done it. I think it was either Malachi or Megan brought it up to us. If any of you happen to have a Guinness pint glass at home, you can try it. Or if you go out to a pub or wherever to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with a pint of Guinness, and there's a Guinness pint glass, apparently, when the glass is full of Guinness, you take one sip, and your goal is to, because there's a thick layer of foam, the head of the beer, you're supposed to split the G with the head of the beer, of the Guinness. I'm hoping I'm explaining that right. I'm sure Malachi could.
The line, your line of beer reaches the G line, the letter G, like the the part that comes around and the horizontal line on the G.
Correct. Yeah, the font of the, I should have mentioned that, the font on the glass, it says Guinness, and I mean the head of a Guinness should be about an inch thick. Okay. So the goal is to basically, I think, balance the top and bottom of the G with that, with the foam or the head, and split the G, as the kids say.
Okay.
And I've seen other breweries do it with their, you know, the first name of their brewery as well, to split. I saw Finnegan's one, Finnegan's Irish Red Ale in Minneapolis, split the F, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it started with Guinness because of the thick frothy head there.
Got
split
it.
The G.
Well, let us know if you've ever tried that. 218-326-1234.
Malachi just texted us, said, you hold the glass. Okay, that's right. Thank you, Malachi. You hold the glass so you can't see the G. That's the key.
Oh,
and you just,
okay.
it's only your first sip. Whoever gets it closer wins. So you do it with a group of friends.
Sounds fun.
Yes.
We're going to hear some new music now from Minnesota artist Mary Bew. This one's called Trying to Fight the Wind.
You're giving it everything. For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with a special edition of the Up North Report. The sheriff's offices in Itasca and Cass counties are the first two Minnesota law enforcement agencies to sign on as force multipliers with ICE. Under federal law, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement may delegate authority to state and local officers to interrogate people about their immigration status during routine police work. In an executive order signed on his first day back in office, President Donald Trump required ICE to authorize local agencies to perform these duties, reopening the abandoned 287G program. Itasca County Sheriff Joe Dasovich and Cass County Sheriff Brian Welk both agreed to participate in the task force model, one of three models of cooperation in which local authorities can assist in enforcing civil immigration laws. ICE trains and deputizes selected officers within participating agencies. Historically, local agency enforcement has led to concerns of racial profiling and exposed counties and states to legal liability over constitutional rights violations. The program was shuttered in 2012 by the Obama administration, but President Trump's focus on mass deportations has led to its renewal. In interviews with KAXE, Dasovich and Welk both say they believe joining the task force model will increase safety in the communities they serve. Dasovich pointed to a recent grandparent scam in the region where at least three victims handed over about $50,000 to an in-person scammer under the belief a grandchild needed money for bail. One of the men arrested allegedly told authorities he was from Colombia and expressed concerns about being deported. Dasovich says his office is limited by how much they can assist in such a case without an agreement with ICE.
My number one priority is to keep our community safe. So I made the choice to become a TFO agency.
Welk says similar scams have occurred in Cass County and that the sheriff's office wants to be good partners with all federal law enforcement agencies.
I want our officers to be able to be fully compliant and not get caught up in any of the pitfalls that might be.
Both sheriffs acknowledge that despite this recent example, encountering undocumented immigrants in their counties through the course of police work is rare. They emphasize their agencies would not proactively look for undocumented people, limiting their involvement with ICE to people otherwise under investigation for committing crimes.
I want to be clear. This isn't just to go round up any illegal alien. This is to protect our county from a specific criminal element.
Welk similarly says his agency would not conduct raids. While local law enforcement has the authority to make arrests, they cannot detain someone unless they've met certain criteria, such as being deemed a public safety or national security threat, those with an outstanding arrest warrant, or those who've previously been deported. The complexity of immigration law, a lack of in-depth training, and infrequent enforcement are some of the factors that make the program problematic, according to Ben Casper, staff attorney with American Civil Liberties Union Minnesota.
Training just doesn't provide local law enforcement participants the level of knowledge and expertise to make reliable judgments about the status of people they're encountering.
Casper says these agreements are often decided without public input and may lead to substantial financial or moral costs, like family separation. ICE training for local agencies has not taken place, and Welk says he isn't yet sure when it will. Neither sheriff anticipates additional costs to their departments by participating. Asked about profiling risks, this is what Welk had to say.
We have policies for that, right? That's not what we're looking for. That's not our main job. This is something that if it comes up, that we're able to deal with it.
Dasovich says undocumented people might already be less likely to call 911, no matter the task force model.
Just because they're here undocumented doesn't mean they can't be a victim of a crime as well. And we would deal with the situation at hand.
More on this story at our website, kaxe.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
can hear the latest edition of the Up North Report at 5:30 today during All Things Considered on KAXE. It's 8:36. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Chris Walker.
Good morning, everyone. We receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of first call for help 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
We also thank North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. Coming up at 8:45, we're going to talk with Marina Lovell from Great River Rescue in Bemidji. But first, we're going to hear more from National Public Radio about March Madness.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. March Madness is here. The brackets for the men's and women's Division I college basketball tournaments were set yesterday. And NPR sports correspondent Becky Sullivan tirelessly has been poring over all of them. So, okay, the headline for the men's bracket. 14 of the 68 teams from one conference, Becky. My goodness, that's got to be a record.
It is a record, in fact. Yeah, I think college sports fans are used to the SEC dominating in football. Now the SEC, the Southeastern Conference, is on top of basketball, too. They were hailed all season long as the strongest conference, and now they are sending, as you say, 14 teams. That's a record. It's all but two teams in the entire conference are going to the big dance, including two of the tournament's number one seeds, top overall seed Auburn, and then Florida, who came on hot to finish the season, I think will be a very popular pick for national champion. And so just a tour de force there.
Yeah, and Duke is another number one seed. Duke is Duke. Mm-hmm. I remember someone saying that. Now, a lot of other perennial contenders and recent champions, though, didn't do so well this year.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of familiar names that are kind of middling seeds this year, including Kansas, UConn, North Carolina. All of them reached the championship game in the last few years, but all of them seeded seven or lower, and then a couple other recent champs in Virginia and Villanova who missed the tournament entirely. Kind of a topsy-turvy year, I would say, in college basketball as college sports undergo these changes we've been talking about a lot with players getting paid, transferring freely, that kind of thing. And so you have these longtime college basketball coaches who have retired. Their schools have struggled to sort of transition. And so as a result, it really feels like the upside of that being a year where there could be a first-time champion or teams reaching the Final Four for the first time in school history, which I think is very cool.
All right, now the women's bracket, which I'm looking at both brackets. This one, to me, is the juicier one in terms of possible mm-hmm. Final Four matchups. The top overall team is a UCLA.
Yeah, and I think UCLA, now that's a name that used to be synonymous with men's college basketball, but actually the women's team has never reached the Final Four. So this is the best season in school history. Very exciting there. Lots of contenders, though, including, of course, South Carolina, led by head coach Dawn Staley, who is an icon in this sport. Last year, they went undefeated, including the national title, but this year, not quite so invincible. The other top two seeds are Southern California and Texas. And as you say, I just think, you know, women's basketball right now has so many electric stars that sort of drive interest in the game. You have Juju Watkins with the Trojans. You have Flaje Johnson at LSU. Paige Beckers with UConn. UCLA have this pair of stars in Lauren Betts and Kiki Rice. All of them are a treat to watch no matter who they're playing. It's going to be really exciting to see some of those Goliath versus Goliath matchups once we get a little further into the tournament.
Yeah, UCLA has only lost twice this season, both times to USC, their mm-hmm. crosstown rival. I hope they meet up somehow in the mm-hmm. Final Four. Okay, so for people that might be trying to fill out their brackets today, give us some help, Becky. Who do you see as a Cinderella?
Well, in the men's tournament, I think important to point out for people filling out their brackets that an 11 seed has won a first round game over a 6 seed in all of the past 20 tournaments. So I think you should pick at least one. I think this year the trendiest pick will certainly be Drake over Missouri. Drake, first time D1 head coach, and Ben McCollum, who came from Northwest Missouri State, where he led that team to 4 Division II national titles. They have great defense. I'm also intrigued by UC San Diego, who recently moved up to D1, and they come into the dance on a 15 game winning streak.
All right, what about the women's?
Well, in the women's, I think there aren't really Cinderellas in the same way there are in the men's, but if you want to go for one, I think 6 seed Iowa could be frisky, who pulled off a win over USC earlier this season. So even though they no longer have that superstar Caitlin Clark who's in the WNBA, they still have a lot of tournament experience.
All right, that's NPR's Becky Sullivan. Becky, thanks.
You're welcome.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Faldin.
I'm Jennifer Barr. with Chris Walker. It is the Monday morning show here on People Powered KAXE. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Weather for today, slight chance of snow, especially this morning, mostly cloudy. Highs 40 to 49, winds from the east 5 to 10, mostly cloudy tonight, lows 20 to 25, and tomorrow mostly cloudy with highs near 40. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk with Marina Lovell from Great River Rescue. But first, we're going to hear some new music. This is a band called Wilder Woods.
Did I choose? Is this a test or is it true? The wars I rage because of you.
That is new music from Wilder Woods called Hide Anymore here on the Monday morning show on KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Chris Walker. Marina Lovell is executive director at Great River Rescue in Bemidji. They have their Fur Bowl fundraiser this Sunday, and they will begin offering their pet fixers clinics this spring. Once again, Marina joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you both?
Great.
Doing great. Thank you
for joining us.
Good. Yeah, thanks for the invite.
Yeah.
So Marina, tell us about Great River Rescue. How long have you been serving the Bemidji area?
Oh, Great River Rescue started in 1977, and it was actually they called themselves the Beltrami Humane Society back then. And it was up on a little bit north of town, and I believe 20 or so years ago, they moved to the current location, which is just a little bit south of town. It's on Carr Lake Road in the industrial park. And the name was changed to Great River Rescue around that time with the new building and everything. Great River Rescue is a 501c3 nonprofit, which relies heavily on community financial support, lots of volunteers, lots of fosters. We serve mainly the northern region of Minnesota, but we will help whoever we can, wherever we can. We take in dogs and cats. No other animals, just dogs and cats. There's plenty of those around that need our services. So, yeah, we serve around 300 animals a year in the shelter. There's more that we do, of course, with our Pet Fixes program, but that's typically what we do every year, about 300 cats and dogs. Yeah. So in a couple of years, it will be our 50th year. So that's very exciting. We've been around for a long time, well-established, well-supported, a much-loved community organization. And I'm very happy to be working there.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, especially if you think almost 50 years and that many animals a year, just think of all the animals over all of that time that you have,
it's a lot.
That you have helped. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this Sunday, March 23rd, you have your Fur Bowl fundraiser at Bemidji Bowl. Can you tell us how is that going? Do you have enough teams? Are you still looking for people to join in on that?
You know, I checked last night at Bemidji Bowl to see if they had more lanes available than what we reserved, just in case other people wanted to join in. And there are lanes available. So if anybody else would like to join us, it's a really fun event. And it's just a couple of hours. It's 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock on Sunday. And people can, we're doing like the QR code thing now. So you can go to our Facebook page and there's a pinned post, or you can go to our website, www.greatriverrescue.com. And there's a flyer on there with the QR code and it gives all of the information. And you just click that and go through and register. Teams are teams of six. And get pizza and drinks, and it's a lot of fun. There's prizes. We have bowling pins that have been decorated by Loon Country artists. They're really beautiful, really beautiful. And there's a strike table. You get prizes for different kinds of strikes. And it's as you say, it is a fundraiser. So the event is a fundraiser. And then we do ask if people can fundraise in amongst themselves. That's great too. And then the team or the person who raises the most money for us gets a prize of a puppygram or a kittengram whenever we have puppies and kittens. And there's also a raffle. So it's a lot of fun. This year's event is sponsored by First National Bank of Bemidji. They're our gold sponsor. And then our silver sponsor is Perma Security. We have a Yeti cooler on raffle. We have dog beds and gifts and cat things for raffle. Menards has given a raffle item. So it's a really fun event. It's a great fundraiser for us. It's been going around. I didn't realize until I looked everything up yesterday. This has been going on since 2006. Mm-hmm. So this is, and when I first started at the shelter just over a year ago, I got emails in January asking, are you going to be doing the Fur Bowl this year? Mm-hmm. So it's something that the community really enjoys and, you know, recognizes as a great way to raise funds for the shelter. So yeah, if anybody wants to join in, just go to our website, our Facebook page, click the QR code, sign up, and come on board.
That's great. And yeah, as a reminder to everyone listening, if you just joined us, that's March 23rd, this Sunday, From 1 to 3 p.m. at Bemidji Bowl.
Yep, to benefit Great River Rescue. You mentioned a puppy gram or a kitten gram. Can you just explain what that is?
If we have kittens or puppies, we can bring them to your place of work, any place like that, you know, maybe the radio station.
Oh,
we
yeah.
can bring them. Yep. we are coming up to kitten season, so we have a litter in foster already, so we can bring those. Puppy season is coming around. We've got some puppies on our waiting list that we think we'll probably be bringing some of those into the shelter this week. And we might even be bringing some of them to the Fur Bowl if they haven't already been adopted. Yep. So, and in fact, March 23rd is National Puppy Day. Which, so yeah, we can bring puppies, kittens to your place of work, a party, something like that, whatever. Yeah, that's fun.
I love that.
Really fun. Yeah.
Don't tell my daughters or else we're going to have puppies. I think every birthday party there.
There you go. That's right.
Marina, so looking ahead in addition to kitten season, you also talked about these pet fixer clinics, excuse me. And I was wondering if you could explain to our listeners how these work, because it's a really, sounds like a really cool program from what I read that Great River Rescue offers.
Yes. Our Pet Fixers Low Cost Spay and Neuter Clinics. Back in 2020, Great River Rescue started. They acquired, it was already running, the Pet Fixers program, and they acquired it and started it through Great River Rescue in 2020. And it's held in a trailer, actually. The trailer is outfitted for, you know, into a surgical suite. And we have a vet and two or three vet techs from around the state come up to Bemidji and spend the weekend spaying and neutering dogs and cats. And with it being in a trailer, that means that we can really only do it through sort of like the less wintry months. So it's typically once a month from April through November. We do add a March clinic. We've just had that done. And that is for the current residents in the shelter and animals that have been adopted from us. So a couple of weeks ago, we had about 60 of our animals go through and get all of them spayed and neutered. And then the rest of the year, once a month clinics for the community. And it gets a little confusing. So for an April clinic, you can start registering on the first of the month prior to the clinic. So if it's an April clinic, you would start registering online around 6 o'clock in the morning, March 1st. So all the way through. So November clinics, open up your website at 6 o'clock in the morning, October 1st. Mm-hmm. So it's, and they fill up very, very quickly. And we spay and neuter around 80 cats and dogs every weekend. Wow. The day starts at about 6 o'clock for some of the staff. The vets get there around 7. And we work through, vets work through until about 5. We work through until about 8, getting everything pulled together and get everybody back out into their homes. But it's an intense, fast-paced, high-volume clinic that is so important for the community. The most expensive surgeries are for, you know, bigger female dogs. And that's around, so, and then the male cats, that's like the cheapest one. It's about $95 for them. And we can do other things. If you need shots, vaccinations, treatments, we'll do those. They're microchipping. We do all of those things through the clinic. So Since we started in 2020, we have spayed and neutered 3,487
wow.
cats and wow. dogs in just those 2 days, you know, a month. So the volume is extremely high. The need is great. And, you know, whatever we can do to help people use those services, you know, that's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, you mentioned spring is a time where you tend to get more kittens and puppies. And how have adoptions been going? Does it keep pretty steady throughout the year? Or does that kind of fluctuate as well?
Yeah, it does seem to fluctuate. I think after the new year, it kind of drops off just a little bit. We do also intentionally not adopt out so much in December. Because we don't really want people to have Christmas pets and then, you know, they realize that wasn't the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great idea, but maybe you need to think it through a little bit more.
Yeah. Exactly. And we have had quite a few quick turnarounds with adoptions recently. So we've had some dogs and cats come in and then they've turned around and left. So we've been able to bring quite a few more in recently, and we've got some dogs and cats lined up to come in this week as well. We are a no-kill shelter, which means that we keep our dogs and our cats with us until they find their home. We don't euthanize to create space for other animals to come in. And so what this means is that we need to have a waiting list for animals to come in, you know. So we do have that waiting list, and we work through that when we have space. So it can be frustrating, I understand, for people that need us to take in their pets, but we can't do that if we don't have space, and we don't make space. Mm-hmm. that happens through adoptions. So so we have had, like I say, quite a few turnarounds recently. We actually had a dog in from the Grand Rapids City Pound. We work with a lot of pounds, other pounds and shelters around the region. And he came in a couple of weeks ago, and then he was just adopted just this last few days. So, yeah, it starts to pick up again. And then, of course, when we get puppies and kittens in, the volume of adoptions, that rises too, because, you know, there's more animals. Mm-hmm. But we definitely need more fosters. This is the thing that we need when we have puppies and kittens, or when the mamas come in pregnant, we like them to be born in foster so that they get more attention. And of course, their immune systems are lower when they're just born. So we like them to be in, you know, in less of a busy environment. So if anybody's interested in fostering, no matter, you know, we usually have like a 30-mile limit for fostering. But yeah, there will be a lot of kittens. Kitten season, I understand, used to be like April through October, but we have had kittens all throughout this last year.
Yeah.
So sure. It's a lot. But
okay. Yeah. Well, that is Marina Lovell, Executive Director of Great River Rescue in Bemidji. Their Fur Bowl fundraiser is this Sunday, March 23rd, from 1.